Good afternoon. This is Richmond Independent Radio News for Friday, April 15th. I'm George Goodrich. This week on Richmond Independent Radio News, we visit Richmond's Firehouse Theater. Police Chief Rodney Monroe talks about police-involved shootings, and we ask Richmonders what they think of the police presence in their neighborhood. On April 18, 1780, Richmond replaced Williamsburg as Virginia's capital. Prompted by the attacks on Fort Sumter and President Lincoln's call for troops, Virginia voted to secede from the Union on April 17, 1861. Today is the deadline for federal income taxes. You have until midnight to file your return or for an extension. Now the news.
For WRIR News, I'm Clyde Hott. The Richmond Ballet has performed both innovative contemporary and classical works around the country. However, after 21 years, there was one stage they had yet to grace. Last week, the ballet made their first trip to New York City, and they brought some influential friends and neighbors along for the ride. WRIR's Lauren Ball has this report.
On April 5th, the Richmond Ballet made its debut in New York City, opening the first of seven shows at the Joyce Theater. The company performed six works from their repertoire and two alternating programs. At the final performance on Sunday afternoon, the ballet's marketing director, Jennifer McKenzie, was enthusiastic about the experience and about returning to New York in the future.
It's just been so positive. The New York audience has been wonderful. The people at the Joyce have been wonderful. So I know we pack up in a minute and come back, and so I certainly hope we can.
Governor Mark Warner and First Lady Lisa Collis made the trip to New York in support of the ballet. They organized a series of events in collaboration with Richmond Arts Organizations, the Virginia Opera, the Virginia Tourism Corporation, local artists, and corporate sponsors. The ballet's performances provided the centerpiece for a weekend celebrating Virginia arts while highlighting Richmond's contributions to that community.
The governor's been very supportive of the ballet from day one, and when we knew we were coming to New York, we called and said, would you and First Lady Lisa Collis come with us? And immediately they said, yes, we'll be there, and they hosted our gala event on Thursday night, and then the momentum just grew.
The Richmond Ballet has returned to Virginia and will close its season at the Virginia Arts Festival on May 1st. For WRIR News, I'm Lauren Ball in New York City.
Monday night, Richmond City Council voted 8-1 in favor of adopting a new real estate tax. WRIR's Mike Doolin reports.
Previously set at $1.38 per $100 of home assessed value, the new rate dropped 5 cents to $1.33. The council stated that this was in accordance with recommendations set by Mayor Douglas Wallerer to help pay for the budget he developed. Had no action been taken by the council, state code mandated the rate to drop to $1.24. This buffer was designed to give taxpayers a break when property assessments rise. Richmond raised its assessment on homes earlier this year. The increases ranged from 8% to 27% in some areas. Although this is a tax cut, many homeowners still owe more in taxes due to rising assessments. 6th District Councilwoman Ellen Robertson was a lone dissenting vote on the council.
We are too dependent on residential real estate taxes as our primary source of funds to operate the city. And the only way that we're going to do the job that we're charged to do is going to be through the process of us becoming less dependent.
Council members said concerns voiced by citizens about safety and needed infrastructure improvements demonstrate the need for the present rate. For WRIR, I'm Mike Doolin at City Hall.
In case you missed it, Monday was Virginia Union University Day in Richmond. By special decree, Mayor Douglas Wilder bestowed the honor on VUU for the school's basketball accomplishments. The Panthers won 30 of 34 games this season and defeated Bryan University to win the NCAA Division II championship for the first time since 1992. VUU athletic staff and team members were presented with pins and a plaque at the city council meeting Monday night. Celebrations on Lombardi Street continue today as VUU inaugurates Dr. Belinda Anderson as the first female president in the school's 140-year history. What do you talk about, or not talk about, at a quiet conference? WRIR's Carol West has this report on the second Richmond Quiet Conference to be held this Sunday, at the Science Museum.
Noise Off, a national organization that seeks to educate people about the effects of noise, and other local community organizations are holding a quiet conference. Its purpose is to engage citizens, those who want quiet and those who want to enjoy their music or their motorcycles or other noise-producing activities in productive dialogue. Nappy Apolito is an early childhood educator and one of the conference's organizers. She believes there is a way to reasonably accommodate all lifestyles, but that something needs to be done because Richmond is too noisy.
Richmond is so well known as a noisy city that a recent BBC series about noise called The Noisy Ape, the first segment of those four shows was about Richmond.
Besides hearing loss that comes from repeated exposure to high levels of environmental noise, Apolito says there are other noise health hazards you might not realize.
There is an increase in blood pressure. It can contribute to sleeplessness. It can contribute to cognitive disabilities. It can affect a child's ability to learn to read.
The Quiet Conference is free and open to the public. Registration starts at 10:30 Sunday morning at the Science Museum on Broad Street. More information is available at www.noiseoff.com. I'm Kara West for WRIR News in Richmond.
You can get your blood pressure checked tomorrow while eating a veggie burger and finding out how to get money to renovate your home. It's all about health, yours, your houses, and your communities, at the annual Carver Community Health and Housing Fair. Leah Lamb of the Carver VCU Partnership is excited about the new features of this year's fair.
One of the things that we're featuring this year that's new is that we're going to have workshops. So Acorn is going to come in and they're going to do a workshop on how do you get a loan to renovate your house. We also have the YMCA coming through to do a basic fitness class that can teach you how you can do fitness activities in your own home. And then we also have a group called New Visions who's going to come in, and they're going to do a financial freedom workshop.
The Carver Community Health and Housing Fair happens tomorrow from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the corner of Harrison and Marshall Streets. Richmond is a hotbed of local bands. But what happens when you take local musicians and put them on shuffle? WRIR's Joe Mager has this report.
Y'all can have it.
Can I get one?
Yeah, brother.
Welcome to Good in Bed Band Rehearsal. If you haven't heard of Good in Bed, it's probably because they've only been a band for about a week. They're rehearsing for their only show as part of Richmond's Rock Lotto. The way it works? Local musicians are assigned to four-member bands by way of a random drawing, with no accounting for instrumentation. The bands then have 9 days to put together a 20-minute set. The only rule of Rock Lotto is there's no exchanging band members. This will be the fifth Rock Lotto here in Richmond. Paige Harbert of Hit Play Productions, which organizes the event, says Rock Lotto is a unique gig for bands.
It brings together local musicians that may or may not have ever known each other, and they're thrown together in a super intense regiment to bring together all different kinds of styles of music and make something entertaining for the audience to see.
You can see all the Rock Lotto bands in action tonight at Nancy Reagan on Gray Street. The show starts at 8 p.m. and is only $5 to get in. For WRIR, I'm Joe Mager in The Fan.
The National Weather Service in Wakefield is predicting sunny and breezy conditions this afternoon, highs only around 60. For those of you heading to the Arbraves home opener, grab a hot water bottle and don your thermals. Clear conditions tonight with temperatures in the mid-30s. Saturday, sunny, high in the lower 60s, low in the mid-30s. Sunday, sunny and milder, highs getting into the 70s. Sunday night, not as cool, with lows in the upper 40s. This is WRIR News.
Richmond Independent Radio News is looking for thought-provoking commentaries. If you're a Richmond resident and have something to say, drop us an email, news@wrir.org. You own the airwaves, so grab your microphone and speak your mind.
Here are the many voices of Richmond on WRIR.
Shaco Bottom is not just a business opportunity, it's a neighborhood.
There's nothing there to stop the fire, so with the wind blowing, you pretty much had an inferno.
If you're not doing your job, you get fired. Now, if the mayor doesn't do his job, the voters can fire him.
Richmond Independent Radio News, each Friday at 4 p.m. Radio news for the rest of us. For WRIR News, I'm George Goodrich. Just before 4:30 last Saturday morning, Richmond police officer Christopher Snyder shot Yobani Sosa. Sosa, a 26-year-old Guatemalan national, along with 22-year-old Mercedes Esteban, were allegedly trying to pry open the rear door of La Comida Mixta, a Guatemalan restaurant on the 4000 block of Jefferson Davis Highway. According to police, when Officer Snyder confronted them, Sosa advanced with a tire iron, at which point the officer fired three rounds, hitting Sosa twice in the chest. Sosa was rushed to VCU Medical Center, where he died late Tuesday afternoon. This is the ninth fatal shooting by a Richmond City police officer in the last 5 years. Richmond Police Chief Rodney Monroe was sworn in February 7th of this year. He spent 22 years as a police officer in Washington, D.C., and the last 3 years as police chief of Macon, Georgia. One of the first things Chief Monroe did after he took the job was to order a review of all police-involved shootings in Richmond.
Well, you know, coming here, I mean, quite naturally, there was a large stir and controversy and concern as relates to the number of police shootings that have occurred over the past couple of years, and some of them, you know, controversial. You're aware of the fact that a Commonwealth attorney had, you know, sought to prosecute an officer that was involved in the shooting based on their concerns as it relates to the facts of that case. And coming into a situation like that, me myself, is no way that I could really have been able to bring some stability to that situation. We had gone through several different type of scenarios. The state police were investigating some of the police shootings that were being called in. So not wanting to choose any sides or to, you know, play favorites in any direction, and wanting to know myself and only wanting the situation to become better, I opted to ask the Department of Justice to come in and conduct a review.
And you've made some changes on how police-related shootings are being investigated by the department. Is that correct?
Yes, you know, I believe that any police department with the proper resources should be able to conduct their own investigations. We conduct investigations as it relates to loss of life for every citizen or situation in the city, and it makes no sense for us not to be able to internally investigate our own. So therefore, I think you need to have the right cadre of people doing it. So we created a police shooting team within our homicide division. Pretty much their responsibility is to investigate all police uses of deadly force. They're our most seasoned and experienced detectives within homicide. They will be the ones that will address it and investigate it from the criminal side. It is a homicide, and a homicide is the taking of a person's life by another. And it doesn't differentiate between police or somebody else, so it has to be investigated from a criminal perspective. So we felt that we had the individuals capable of doing that. But to balance that out and to look at it from the perspective of what does the department policy say, the uses of deadly force, the training, we wanted to be able to be sure that we were looking at those areas just as closely. So we created a shooting team within our internal affairs, and they more or less work along a dual track with homicide. And one is investigating from the criminal aspect, and the other one is investigating from the administrative, but they do it simultaneously. A lot of departments had a handoff, criminal investigation done first, then they pass it off for the administrative, but we wanted to work a dual track where the two of them can. And, you know, I saw it actually work very well last week where they simultaneously conducted that investigation together.
The last chief in his position said he called off the police shooting review on the advice of the city attorney. Has the city attorney advised you to call off this review?
I didn't ask him.
And if he did, would you comply?
Unless there was some reason that I felt that outweighed the seriousness. I mean, you're talking about the credibility of a police department. and it would have to be something very significant for me to call off this inquiry. I didn't ask anyone for permission to do this. I felt it was something that needed to be done, and we're going to try to move forward with that.
And how important is the community police relationship in regards to this?
Well, you know, any police department's success is pretty much based on the confidence level that the community has in it. Very seldom are we able to identify individuals responsible for crimes or apprehend individuals or find key pieces to an investigation without citizens' help. So we want to always look to make sure that we uphold ourselves in a manner in which the community has a great deal of respect and trust in what we do.
Now, the police department, I understand, has had an increase in the number of arrests and murders. Can you help explain how that's happening?
Well, I think that a lot of the problems the department has been enduring over the last couple of years has been based on a couple of things: communication, openness, and a willingness to share information, to be forthright with that information. And I think now we are starting to make sure that's what we do. The community has stepped forward in a wonderful way to say that, hey, we do respect our police department and we do want to help. And the amount of information that has come in to assist us in closing some of these cases has really served the city of Richmond well, not just the police department, but the city of Richmond well.
Can you tell me what the latest is on the investigation to the social shooting?
We're almost completed that investigation. You know, another one of our partners in this shooting has been the Commonwealth Attorney, who has the responsibility of reviewing it for whether or not there were any criminal wrongdoing on the part of the police. But they were here from day one on the scene. Once we complete the investigation, we'll turn it over to them for their final decision on whether or not they deem the case to be justified. We'll make our recommendation to them, and we fully expect them to pretty much see it the same way we do.
It's my understanding that Yobani Socha did not speak any English. Are any Richmond police officers trained in Spanish?
Well, you know, we provide a host of training to our officers, and Spanish is one of those in a couple of different forms. We have some longer curriculums and teaching officers Spanish, but we also have a more modified version that teaches certain keywords, phrases, identifying an officer being able to identify themselves and so forth. But, you know, you got to understand something. You're talking about a situation that occurred at 4:30 in the morning in a back alley in a dimly lit location whereby, as the situation unfolded itself, in many cases people aren't looking at individuals' nationality when they're approaching people. So for, you know, anybody that may think that that is a reason or a cause behind all this, that's not something that, you know, the department itself believes.
What kind of programs are you planning to implement in the city over the next year or so?
Well, I mean, we're looking at a host of things. I mean, I'm a very community-focused person, and I believe in engaging the community and assisting and playing a role in identifying and solving problems within the various neighborhoods and just looking to improve the overall quality of life. But I think in order to do that we have to become a little more territorial within the department, meaning we need to assign people to specific geographic locations within the city. Instead of operating on a much larger scale from a precinct perspective, that we need to break those precincts down in a way in which we can assign a cadre of officers to various sections of that precinct to identify the problems, to get to know the citizens, to be able to bring in other resources, to really do some true problem solving. And that just brings about greater accountability. It's no longer a pass-off. If I got a problem, I pass it off to somebody else. No, if you got a problem in your particular sector, you and the individuals that make up that sector are responsible for addressing that problem. I've been involved in law enforcement for 26 years, and I've seen a host of different strategies employed, but the one that I've found to be most beneficial to both a police department and a community is one in which the community and the police work hand-in-hand in addressing problems. And if you look at most citizens in a city of this side are not a victim or ever have been a victim of a crime. A lot of it is based on what they see and what they feel in their individual communities, and you have to find a way to try to address some of those concerns as well as just a number on a board. I just like to continue to encourage the community to partner with the department and know that we may not have operated in this manner in the past, but I feel very strongly this is the best way for all of us to improve the quality of life within the city of Richmond. And I look forward to sharing those experiences and just making for a better quality of life. And sometimes a better quality of life is more beneficial to reducing crime.
Chief Rodney Monroe, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Rodney Monroe is Richmond's chief of police. WRIR sent reporters Andrew Large and Joe Mager to find out what Richmond residents thought of the police presence in their neighborhood.
Since the beginning of the year, have you noticed a difference in the way that your area is being policed?
Robert.
What part of town you live in?
West End. Can't say I have. I'd like to see more traffic stops. Hardly ever see anybody get stopped for traffic infractions.
Mark Monahan, West End. For about a year there have seemed to be more police around in our neighborhood. It's slowed down the speeding on our street.
Leo Caldas. I live here in Carytown. It's kind of like you see them during the day and then at night they're nowhere to be found. Unfortunately, I got mugged right where I live. It took them like an hour to get there. They need to get their shit together.
Helen, South Richmond. I live in a high-rise building. I don't see much of the police. I would hope that they're doing the best they can, but sometimes I think they could do better.
Monty, West End. I think they're around here to make people nervous, to catch people in mistakes.
My name is D. I live in the north side. I see more of a presence it's at times it's kind of harassing. I work two jobs, and I don't like to feel bothered when I'm getting off my bus, walking to my house by cops rolling slow shining their light on me. But, I mean, it goes with the territory. I mean, it doesn't really bother me that bad. I like the cops. I mean, don't tell any of my friends I said that, but, I mean, there are bad cops, there are good cops, but that's just like any other job, you know. You couldn't pay me enough money in this world to be a cop.
Richmond Independent Radio News is looking for thought-provoking commentaries. If you're a Richmond resident and have something to say, drop us an email, news@wrir.org. You own the airwaves, so grab your microphone and speak your mind.
For WRIR News, I'm George Goodrich. The Firehouse Theater Project has been bringing off-Broadway shows to Richmond's Broad Street for 12 years. Famous playwrights Sam Shepard and David Mamet have found homes on stage next to newcomers Henry Ben Hansen and Judith Barker. Hansen and Barker were winners of the theater's third annual Festival of New American Plays held earlier this year. Carol Pearsall is the artistic director of the Firehouse, and Don Baker volunteers at the theater's development department. They feel even with a new performing arts center downtown, the Firehouse will still be a vital part of Richmond's theater scene.
We do American plays, and we started the theater for one reason, because there were plays that weren't being done here. You know, Richmond can be pretty conservative, and we wanted to do plays that some other theaters might have shied away from. And when it deals with language, nudity, adult subject matter, not that we're far out, way out there, inaccessible, it's just that we are, I would say, more cutting edge.
Why do you think that's important for Richmond to have a theater like this?
Because the works are so important. When you get a work like Sam Shepard, Buried Child, and Curse of the Starving Class that have never been done here that talk about the American family and its roots, and Curse of the Starving Class about the disintegration of this family. We need to look at our culture and look at what's happening to this country that deals with things that are still going on today, with taking over land, with development. All that kind of work wasn't being done here.
There's a performing arts center that's being built right in downtown Richmond. Is that going to affect what the Firehouse Theater is able to do?
Well, I guess I would hope that it will be a positive for us, that it will bring more synergy to the live arts in Richmond. I don't see it in any way impacting our ability either to perform or to raise money. For instance, we don't get any money from government agencies, and they apparently are counting on a lot. So I think just every time there's conversation about live theater in Richmond, that helps us.
Has it affected your ability to fundraise?
I don't believe. We're going to be doing some more serious fundraising very soon, and I guess we'll find out. I think that we largely tap different audiences for our money.
How so?
We go after people who largely have come to our shows, so they know what we do. If I could differentiate myself from Carol, Carol was very modest. She forgot to tell you that she was one of the founders of the theater, and I think the way she talked, you could tell she has a passion for the theater. I'm not a theater person. I'm a volunteer. I wound up doing development. As she said, some of the big corporations are shy away from controversy. We don't in any way shape our performances with the thought of whether this is going to affect our fundraising or not. We do what we do, and people who love us, and that's almost everybody who comes here, will support us.
You touched on being a volunteer. Why did you decide to volunteer for the theater?
I came here as a member of the audience, and I thought, wow, this is the best theater in town. And this was introducing me and my wife to a whole exciting new kind of theater. You never know what you're going to see or hear at the Firehouse. It's very exciting as it's full of surprises. And as a result of having retired recently, I found myself with more time, and that's how I got here.
So what's coming up with the Firehouse Theater?
Our next play is a musical called The Last 5 Years by Jason Robert Brown, and it opens April 28th.
And what's it about?
It's about a relationship between two people, and it begins at the beginning of the play. The woman is at the end of the relationship, and the man is at the beginning of the relationship, and it goes back and forth with their perspectives, moving into the middle of time. Then they cross and go to the opposite ends. By the end of the play, they're in the opposite place.
One of the things that we have done with some great success in the last couple of years is to have playwrights actually come here and meet our audiences. Israel Horowitz has been here twice. Edward Albee, the Pulitzer Prize winner, has been here. And I'm hoping that Jason Robert Brown is going to come. I first saw The Last 5 Years off-Broadway 3 years ago and loved it. And by the way, it's not as edgy as some of our shows. If people want to come and just see a really wonderful show with fabulous music, they'll love it.
Carol Pearsall and Don Baker work at the Firehouse Theater Project on Broad Street. This has been Richmond Independent Radio News. I'm George Goodrich. I'd like to thank the volunteers who helped produce this program.
Clyde Hott.
Lauren Ball.
Mike Doolin.
Kara West.
Andrew Larch. Joe
Mager. Along with Latika Lee, Dustin Richardson, and Aaron Hickey. If you would like to comment on our news programming, suggest stories, or become part of Richmond Independent Radio News, drop us an email, news@wrir.org. This is WRIR, LP 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.